Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing good, John. I'm doing great. I have electricity and stuff to school. Should we get right into it about how this episode almost did not happen?
Yeah, there was a chance where it looked like we might have to skip a week because here in the Northeast, where we record this show right now from our respective homes, we had a hurricane this week. Hurricane, what is it called? Isthmus? Something like that?
Something like that. Isis, Isthmus. I don't know. This one had like a really crazy name that I just could not pronounce like for the life of me.
Yeah. I feel like I should learn how to pronounce it because it did affect my life. I mean, it came through, it wasn't, you know, it was like kind of intensely rainy. I was at work when it happened and it was kind of intense. And then when I came home on, this past Tuesday, all the light was out in my apartment complex and in my neighborhood. Like there were traffic lights that were not functioning in my neighborhood and the cops had already had roads closed off. So I had to get creative to even find my way back to my apartment.
Oh man.
And then when I came back to my apartment, like a few of my neighbors were outside and I could, you know, it was very obvious that there was no power anywhere in the complex. And I was like, oh, when did the power go out? They were like, about 12:30. And it's like, and they think it's going to be out for a few days.
Few days, they said? They didn't
a few
like...
days. That's what they were predicting. And that was on Tuesday. I had Wednesday off from work. So I was just kind of home.
Just sitting in the dark?
I mean, there is surprisingly little to do when you have no electricity. You know, you can't watch TV, you can't go on the internet, you can't do so many things, so many leisure things that we just kind of take for granted and do automatically.
Wow, were you just like reading books by candlelight or something?
I basically was. Like, I mean, I went to bed absurdly early on Tuesday because it was, like around 10 or 11, it's like completely dark. And I was just like, well, there's literally nothing to do. I may as well just go to bed. And then Wednesday, about half the day, I just read a book that I received as a birthday gift from my friend Frank. He sent me a Liz Phair's memoir, Horror Stories, and I just read that in like one sitting.
Oh, wow. All right, there you go.
I was like, well, you know, I may as well do something kind of fun. And then after that, I went out on a quest to get gas for my car. And because like a lot of gas stations around me were closed and to get some food because I couldn't really cook anything.
It sounds like a quiet place.
And charge my phone because my phone was by that point was down to about 21%. So fortunately, the Panera Bread near me was open. So I went there. I was able to get some food, charge my phone, actually met one of my neighbors there.
Oh, they were like, oh, so you were able to bond, but like. You know, now living in the end times.
Exactly. I bonded with one of my neighbors. And so my power was out all day Wednesday. When I got home Thursday night, my power was back. So I had electricity again, but my cable and my internet were still out. And those came back by Friday. And it wasn't until they came back by Friday that I was like, okay, well, I guess we can do an episode now.
Yay! The SNL gods showing upon us. Because they
would have kind of stunk to miss a week, because we haven't really missed many weeks. We've like taken, I think, a week off for Christmas each year, and I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, no, we're on it. We're here 24/7. We're like a 7-Eleven. Like we never close.
Yeah. So how was your week?
Not bad. You know, I had electricity and stuff and, you know, things were cool. You know, watched some movies and I did no reading because I had electricity everywhere around me. So my brain is not as, you know, as well-learned as yours.
Yeah. Well, so So, you know, but now that I have electricity again, I'll never have to do that again.
Oh, God, it must be a nightmare. Like reading.
I got another book in the mail the other day. I'm not going to read that thing for a year.
Set that thing on fire. No, thank you.
No, actually, it's a really cool book. I got an Eric Idle's memoir, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. So I'm looking forward to tearing into that one, too.
Oh, far out.
Yeah.
That's pretty dope.
Good gift for a comedy nerd.
Absolutely. I like the sound of that.
So, yeah. Right.
So, we got an episode. We're able to do this episode, and we're able to talk about this movie. And the movie we're talking about today is Wine Country, Netflix film that came out last year, May 10th, 2019.
I can't believe that this has been out for a year already. It seems like it just came out like a couple months ago.
No, I mean, in the end times, there is no time. Time is, like, you know, like something that came out a year ago feels like just came out yesterday.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that's true. So yeah, this movie is interesting. It's got a real SNL pedigree to it. It was directed by Amy Poehler, and it stars Amy Poehler, Rachel Dratch, Anna Gasteyer, Maya Rudolph, Tina Fey, and Paula Pell and Emily Spivey, who are both writers on the show.
Right, right. This is Poehler's directorial debut in film. I think she's done. She directed a few episodes of Parks and Rec before this, but it is her first film. And the film was written by Emily Spivey or Spivey and Liz Kakowski. Liz Kakowski, she also was an SNL writer along with Spivey, and she also wrote on The Last Man on Earth, which is a show I didn't really get into, but I heard a lot of my friends like really liked it quite a bit.
I know there's a big cult around that show, and I've only seen the odd episode or two. I feel like I should watch a little more of it to give it more of a decent shot, you know?
Yeah, same thing. Like I've seen a few episodes. I thought, oh, this is okay, but yeah, there are some diehard Last Man on Earth fans that like you know love this film, that TV show to pieces.
Yeah, and from what I understand from the IMDb trivia page, it says that this movie was inspired by a real life trip that the SNL stars took together to celebrate a 50th birthday. I think it was Rachel Dratch's birthday. They did a real life Wine Country celebration. They went to Sonoma County instead of Napa Valley.
Yeah, I mean, this film is basically like, another SNL film, Grown Ups, you know, with Spade and Sandler and Rock, where it's just basically like a bunch of friends who grew up together in SNL kind of hanging out and partying and being like, hey, we should make a film out of this. And they made a movie out of it. So this Wine Country is pretty much like the middle-aged female equivalent to that, where they, like you said, they got together for Rachel Dratch's 50th and were like, hey, we should make a movie out of this. And they're like, yeah, let's make a movie about us hanging out and partying.
You know, it's funny that you brought up Grown Ups, because last night I was flipping around on the television, just kind of like you know, enjoying having the television again. And I think it was on Comedy Central or some cable channel. I can't remember which. They were showing the end of Grown Ups 2. So I watched the very end of Grown Ups 2. Never seen Grown Ups 1.
You need to see Grown Ups 1 in order to understand the complexities of Grown Ups 2?
No, not so much. And then after that, they had another movie that had like some SNL connections. The movie Rough Night from a few years ago with Scarlett Johansson and
Kate McKinnon. Yeah, that movie kind of fizzled out. I remember hearing about it, and like it seemed like an all female version of remember that movie Very Bad Things that came out years ago.
I unfortunately remember the movie Very Bad Things. Bad Things is a very bad movie.
That's another film that kind of has a cult following, but I remember I watched that from my college newspaper, and it was like, oh, geez. Like it was like, I'm okay with dark comedy, but like that was like dark comedy that was like on the verge and just not being comedy. It was just like,
oh yeah, no, it did, that movie did not work at all. And Rough Night, it's like, you know, had some funny moments. It's one of those movies. That's like, it's okay if you're just like sitting on your couch watching it on TV, or if you're puttering around the apartment doing something else. But if you like went into a theater and you put down money for it, you would feel very disappointed.
Yeah, it's good background noise.
Yeah.
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 So we will not be reviewing Rough Night on this podcast anytime soon.
I mean, we could at some point. I mean, I just watch it out of curiosity and...
I'm good.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Okay. You know, I'm not going to throw anything out, you know, out of principle, because, you know, one day we're going to be way hard up for content and we're going to be like, hey, what about Rough Night?
I swore on this podcast years ago I would never do Rough Night. I can't go back on that.
Well, I'm just more of a whore than you, I guess.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. But anyway, this week we're doing Wine Country. It's another female-centric movie, but less dead sex workers.
Less.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you ever saw the movie Sideways, it's kind of like that in that they're going on a trip through Wine Country, but there are fewer bits of male genitalia pressed up against car windows in this movie.
Yes, very few. Actually, I mean, thinking about this movie now, there's only pretty much one man who has like a good sized part in this movie. It's like an all female film.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, cause we're just basically tracing the six main characters of the movie who are all these old friends who are getting together, for the 50th birthday of Rachel Dratch's character. Her character is named Rebecca. I tried to note everybody's character name over the course of the movie, but about halfway through, I was like, what's the point? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's
Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, Anna Gasteyer, and Rachel Dratch.
Right. Like, I mean, I wrote down everybody's names, but like, I feel like, you know, halfway through this episode, we're just going to call them by their real names, Gasteyer and Rudolph.
It's going to be a lot easier to just keep track. So yeah, I say like, let's just go with the actresses' names. Everybody knows who they are.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, so in the beginning, the movie opens with Amy Poehler's character, Abby. She's at work, and she's talking to Rebecca, played by Rachel Dratch, talking about, you know, we're getting ready for your 50th. I rented this house in Napa Valley. You should, you know, we should all go in on it because it's the best-looking house. And they're basically, a lot of friends playing, like, you know, phone tag. And like talking to each other about the big trip that they're going on. And it's a way to introduce all the characters and who they are and kind of get a little background on each of them. We see Anna Gasteyer plays Catherine, who's like a workaholic and who's very successful celebrity chef. She has like a line of like frozen pizzas and, you know, she's like I said, a workaholic and she's constantly on her phone, constantly.
And she's in talks about doing a new show. That's like kind of her continuing subplot through the movie. And Rachel Dratch's character, Rebecca, she seems, remarkably unconcerned about, turning 50. And, throughout the whole movie, she's just kind of like, hey, this isn't just about me. This is us, you know, this is us getting together and having a fun weekend. And, Amy Poehler's character of Abby, she's going nuts, kind of like planning everything out. She's a real type A type of personality. So she's going the extra mile and she's got like an itinerary for everything. And
yeah, and there's at one point where I honestly didn't notice it until this is my second time seeing the film. Mm-hmm. But like, there's one scene where she's talking to her friends on the phone, saying how great this weekend's going to be, and she's emptying out her cubicle, which, you know, comes back later into play in the movie. But like, that's a quick scene that kind of, I guess, it's like a bit of a teaser as to what's going to come on later in the film. But like, I didn't notice it until like the second time. I was like, hey, wait a minute, her cubicle's empty. And she has a box full of her stuff.
Little foreshadowing. I wonder what her late film revelation's gonna be.
And we also get to Paula Pell, who plays Val, who we realize she's out and proud because she talks about how she wants to meet a woman on this trip.
Right.
You know, like the real life Paula Pell, who's also out. Emily Spivey plays Jenny. We realize she's kind of like the neurotic one who's, you know, has like a lot of anxiety.
I felt like her character was probably the least developed out of the six main characters.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like her character is, she says some funny things, but for the most part, like you said, she's not really like essential to the film in really.
I mean, I was happy she was there and she certainly contributed to the film. I just didn't feel like her character was as strongly defined as all, you know?
Yeah, no, because like I think at one point, she's like talking to, I guess, her husband. I didn't even know if it was her husband or her boyfriend. And like that, I mean, that, you know, goes to the writing where it's like, oh, does she? I don't know. Like, we'll get into it later.
And lastly, we have Maya Rudolph, who's her character is just kind of like a harried mom. She's got like, I think it was four kids, did they say?
Yeah, she plays Naomi. She has four kids, and she's really looking forward to this trip to get away from her kids and her husband and spend a good old time with the gals.
And, you know, because we have to have a reason for all these characters to know each other, and we can't just say, oh, they all know each other from doing a nationally airing sketch comedy show in the mid-90s. They all met in Chicago at a pizza place called Antonio's that they all worked at.
Right, they're all waitresses at a pizzeria. And I actually looked at, I actually kind of looked it up to see if any, if all six of these women were on, since they were all, you know, connected to SNL, were they all on SNL at the same time? And I think they might have been at, for, there was like 1 year where it seems like all six of them were on at the same time, like between 01 and 02, I think.
Oh, really? That's the only crossover that we had all of them there?
I think so. Well, I mean,
I find that a little surprising.
Well, I mean, according to my research, Gosteyer was on SNL from 96 to 02. Dratch was on from 99 to 06. Faye was on from 2000 to 06. Poehler was 01 to 08. Rudolph was 2000 to 07. And Paula Pell was there from 95 to 2013. Spivey was there from 01 to 2010. So, like, if you kind of do the math, wow, you know, facts and figures, numbers, numbers, like, there was between 2001 to 2002, there's like that little window where they were all there at the same time.
Darren Patterson bringing the receipts.
Damn straight. I bring the heat.
Well, you have earned the title SNL nerd today.
That's right. This isn't just a faux title to me. This is a way of life.
Exactly. So they're all getting together and they've all rented this house in Napa Valley. And you're probably saying, John and Darren, how, you haven't mentioned Tina Fey yet. How does Tina Fey figure into this movie? Well, we're going to tell you. Tina Fey, who apparently was just a little too busy to play a larger part in this movie. She plays the owner of the rental house that they decide to stay at. And she plays a character named Tammy. And, you know, so Tina Fey just kind of pops in and out of this movie. I'd be surprised if she shot more than like 2 or 3 days on this film.
Yeah, she's not in it much, but the scenes that she's in, I think she's really good. She's like really funny. Her character Tammy is kind of a, how would you say, like a harder edged woman. She's just constantly wearing like, you know, flannel and vests and whatnot.
Yeah, she gives out kind of a, I know the character's not a lesbian, but the character gives out some sort of lesbian-type vibes.
Right.
She's real harsh. She's just kind of a straight chair. I really enjoyed it because I haven't seen Tina Fey play this type of character before. And it was neat to see her cast a little against type.
Yeah, it was really good. I think that at one point they have Anna Gosteyer's character saying, oh, this is a great house you have. You must meet a lot of interesting characters. And she's like, no, not really. People are pretty much all the same. I go months without talking to anybody.
Yeah. And apparently her character, or her look of her character at least, was inspired by a woman that the creative team met when they were scouting locations for the film. So.
Right. And also they talk about how Tammy came to own the house and she bought it with her husband because they made money through edible organic soaps. Which I guess is a thing, and then, which I sold to Unilever, and then her husband died at like 49, and they were like, oh, that's so sorry to hear that, so young. And she's like, really? I mean, we were doing a lot of blow, so it seemed like
yeah. And I like how she just kind of tossed that off. And so she has an early scene where she's just like showing everyone around the house, and there's some funny bits of business in there. And they're there for the whole weekend. And of course, they're going to tour around wine country and stuff. And I liked it when Tina Fey's character, Tammy, she just says, okay, well, you know, just remember that whatever is said among your group, it's probably what the person has always felt. And the alcohol just let it out.
That's a great line.
Beautiful line. I loved how meta that was. And Tina Fey, of course, delivers it beautifully. So, you know, that was cool.
Chef's kisses.
Yeah. So like I said, I wish Tina Fey could have been around more. And I just wonder what else Tina Fey was busy with at the time when they shot this, that she couldn't be a bigger part of this.
I guess we'll never know.
I guess we'll never know unless we go into some deep dive on Tina Fey's shooting schedules for stuff.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to now.
Or maybe she was just writing stuff or producing something. Tina Fey is a busy woman, is what I'm saying.
My God, she's everywhere.
Absolutely. She is everywhere, deservedly so.
Uh-huh.
But everyone's got their own sort of issues and subplots and secret. You know, it's. I mean, this sort of thing of like the old friends getting together for a weekend, and they all have like their own subplots going on in their lives. This is kind of a genre unto itself. You know, you got the Big Chill, you got the Peter's Friends, you got the other examples of this type.
What's Peter's Friends? I don't think I ever heard of that.
Peter's Friends, that was a movie. I guess that's a little on the obscure side. It was a Kenneth Branagh movie. And it was when he was still married to Emma Thompson, and he had some other people. I think Stephen Fry was in it, and some. I remember it being good.
Okay. Wow, that's a rave review if I've ever heard.
I haven't seen this thing since the 90s.
Okay. I remember it being good.
Yeah.
But we learn early on that like all these friends, they do have secrets that they're keeping from each other, that they're not telling anybody. Like we learn Naomi, Maya Rudolph's character, has a message from her doctor that she's worried about, but she's not telling anybody.
Yeah, it's a voicemail on her phone that she hasn't been able to bring herself to listen to yet.
Right. We also learn that nobody in the little circle likes Rachel Dratch's husband, Brian.
They never really get into that why exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just one of those things where, I mean, they kind of touch on it where they talk about, they say something like, oh, if we left it up to Brian to, you know, take care of her birthday, it would just... Like he would just have something at Macaroni Grill, and then she'd have to drive home because he got too drunk. It just seems like Brian is kind of a not caring, supportive person. But yeah. I do like that little dynamic where, like, you know, one of your friends is kind of dating or married to a person that no one else in the group really likes. So it's like one of those things where you kind of have to be fake to your friend, but like once your friend steps away, you're like, ugh, I hate that guy.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you actually say to your friend, oh, yeah, I don't like your spouse, there's no real going back from that.
So. Yeah, that's hurtful. Of course, Abby doesn't tell any of her friends that she got fired from her job.
What?
Yeah, oh, did I drop the...
Oh, my God, I had no idea.
Spoiler!
That's why she was clearing out her desk earlier on.
Spoiler, everybody, yeah.
Abby, I had no idea.
Yeah, like Abby got fired from her job, but she doesn't tell anybody. She's putting kind of all her focus into this birthday, you know, weekend. And I think also Catherine, you know, the Gosshire's character, is, you know, thinking about going into television, but she's not really talking about it with her friends. So everybody has like a little thing going on with them that they're not really sharing with their group of quote-unquote close friends.
Well, yeah. Because, like, I mean, it's that thing where they go way back, but they haven't been all as involved in each other's lives as they used to be, because like they're mostly living in different cities and stuff, and they got their own stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, and it happens with friendships. Like at one point they say, well, oh, when was the last time we were all together? And I think one of them says, oh, was it at Abby's wedding? And mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that was a long time ago, because now Abby's divorced. So like it's one of those things where they keep in touch through phone and text, but they haven't seen each other and hung out in quite some time.
Yeah. I can't relate to that at all.
Oh, boy. Names.
Well, I mean, let me see. There's this fellow I'm doing this podcast with. I haven't seen him in going on 4 or 5 months now. So,
dude, that's because it's the end of days. That's not...
Oh, right. No, it's not because we've been drifting apart as people. We just haven't been in each other's presence.
It's not me, it's the apocalypse.
Right. And I like your spouse fine.
Thank you. All right.
and he sort of tolerates me. You did not deny.
So the girls go to a restaurant.
So everybody goes out the first night. They go out to a local restaurant there. And we learn that Amy Poehler's character, Abby, she is like timing things down to the minute with her itinerary. I mean, it's nuts.
Right. Like, it's one of those things where she's like, no, we have to do this at this time, this at this time. But Rebecca wants to like kind of let things just happen, let things flow. Hey, maybe don't be as, you know, just let's just go with the flow and whatnot.
So like Abby says, like, oh, when they first get to the house, they're like, okay, we have unpack and unwind. That's 20 minutes.
She timed out unwind.
Right, right.
But yeah, so we start to see the cracks, you know, first forming in their friendship and get together. But yeah, we'll get to that later. And also at the, when they're at the restaurant, you know, there's a young waitress that Val flirts with. You know, nice waitress named Jade. They start to have a little connection. And yeah, and then they start to get drunk and a little raucous and rambunctious. There's a scene where Val gives out dildos to all her friends, dildos and vibrators, which is fun.
And they're all like personalized to her friend's traits, which I thought was a nice touch. That was very considerate of Val.
Yeah, that's a good friendship when you know what you can tell what your friend dildo type is. That's like, that's a deep bond that I don't know if I'll ever know.
Yeah, I don't think we as heterosexual men can really relate to that. But yeah, that does seem like a special thing of female friendship.
Yes. Yeah, let's... Oh, that it's so sweet.
It is so sweet.
And there's also one moment that I kind of liked where a celebrity shows up at the restaurant, and at this point, Val and the waitress Jade are like getting close, and she's like kind of putting the moves on her. And then Abby says, "Oh, did you never guess who's here?" And then the waitress, who's younger, says, "Oh, is it ASAP Rocky? Is it Dua Lipa?" And all these women are like, "What? Who's that?" And
yeah.
So, like, you automatically see the age gap kind of creep in there.
Right.
Like, she's like, oh, is it Future, the Childish Gambino? And it's like, I don't know who that is. And then they say, no, it's Brene Brown, who, as a man, I didn't know who was until this movie.
Yeah, no, I still don't know who that person is.
Brene Brown, I looked it up. She is a podcast host, a professor, lecturer, and author. So there you go. I think she's big in like the middle-aged white woman circles.
Okay.
So yeah. So Brene Brown makes an appearance in this movie. If that means anything to anyone out there.
Doesn't mean much to hear, but okay.
Does not register on my end, but if it makes you happy, God love you.
Good for Brene Brown. Yay.
Yay. So so then, you know, they kind of get in Brene Brown's space, and there's like a little fun back and forth between them. You know, then they keep going on. They keep they're drinking. They're drunk. Val gets Jade's number, and he's like, "Hooray! I got this young gal's number." And they go home, eating McDonald's and just kind of hanging out by the pool and whatnot. And
they've gotten a good buzz on by this point. You know, like a lot of wine was down to dinner, and they hung out and they like closed the restaurant out.
Right.
And then they're all kind of bonding in the living room after dinner. And Anna Gasteyer's character, she says like, "Oh, I brought Molly. We could all, you know, do Molly together."
Because you heard a podcast on about microdosing.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny. They ultimately decide like, well, none of us can take it because none of us really know how it's going to interact with our normal medications. And they all like go on what medications they're currently on. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. If you're a person of a certain age, like I would say like 40 up, there's a lot of things in this movie that'll like kind of register and hit you hard. Like, I can't take drugs like that because I'm on these medications. These drugs I can take, but I don't know about that.
Right, right. You know, this has like a blood thinner, and you know, I don't know what the interaction's going to be. It's a whole thing,
right? So then they decide to dance it out, and there's like another thing. Like I said, like if you're a person of a certain age, it'll hit you where they decide like what music to play, what music to dance to, and like they're saying, "Oh, well, we should have classic rock, we should have this, that, we should have nothing current, nothing past Hey Ya." And like as a man in my 40s, I was like, "Yeah, if I put together a playlist, there's a good chance there's not going to be anything on it past Hey Ya."
Yeah. I think that's just a good rule of thumb for life.
Damn straight.
There was, like, during the Molly scene, during the whole discussion, like, one of the characters said, and I can't remember which character it was, said, "Oh, I want a yes and this, but," and I was like, okay, well, that's kind of giving away what your real background is, because nobody says, like, "Oh, I want a yes and this," unless you've been in an improv trip.
Yeah, that is very true. Like, when she said that, when they said that, I was like, oh, that's, I think it was Dretch that said that, but yeah, yeah. But yes and, if you're not in the world of comedy, like, I'll even say stand-up comedians know about that term.
Yeah, probably.
If you're not in the world of comedy, you have the term yes and means nothing to you.
Like, in the world of improv, like, and I was in an improv troupe for 5 years, like, the basic rule of improv is that you do not deny. Like, if, like, Darren and I are starting an improv scene and we're like, well, here we finally are at this hockey game, Darren shouldn't say, like, "Oh, what do you mean? We're stuck inside in a blizzard," because that just, like, totally negates everything I just established about the scene. And, you know, it's just like he's basically making my character out into a liar or an insane person. And it doesn't really build anything. So,
right. Something like that kills the scene. So you, whatever mm-hmm. your partner says, you want to agree with it and then add to it. And then the other
right.
person, it's like a back and forth. And the other person agrees with that and add something else to it. And you just, it's, that's how a scene gets built.
Right. And that's, I mean, that's one of the basic rules of improv that was developed, you know, by the people who were first figuring this out, like Del Close and Turner Halpern and all that. Like, they figured it doesn't really go anywhere when you're like, oh no, that's not happening. I mean, your characters can disagree with each other, but you agree on the basic situation and things like that. And you try to add on to it. And like Amy Poehler even titled her book, Yes, Please, like as kind of a life philosophy, because she talked about how yes and is just a great philosophy for life.
Oh, I didn't even know. Have you read the book?
I read it years ago when it first came out. I still have that. I did get that as a Christmas present years ago.
Oh, I've been meaning to read that book, but I never have. I should, as an SNL nerd, I should give that a read.
It is worth reading. Yeah. That, and I remember Tina Fey's book, Bossy Pants, also being a good read. I should give that a reread.
Yeah, well, when the next hurricane hits and knocks out my electricity, I have two books to read.
There you go. But that just leaped out to me because I was like, okay, nobody says I want a yes and this. But, you know, that's not something like a suburban housewife or whoever says. That's something that somebody who comes from Second City says.
That's fair enough. I should have picked up on that. I'm glad you did, though.
That just jumped out to me. But, you know, so the next morning, everybody wakes up. They're all, like, horribly hungover. And Amy Poehler walks into the kitchen, wanders into the kitchen, and she discovers Jason Schwartzman. It was Amy Poehler who discovered him, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah, she walks in the kitchen and she finds, like you said, Jason Schwartzman, who plays Devin, who apparently he comes with the house. Mm-hmm. And Tammy forgot to mention him, but he's basically like, you know, their driver and chef, and he knows all about Napa Valley, so he's like basically like kind of their go-to guy, as it were.
He's making paella.
Yeah, he is.
That's kind of his thing throughout this movie, is he's making paella. He's like, he's got like a squid and he's chopping that up. And have you ever had paella before? I've had it and I remember it being very good.
I don't even know what it is. I mean, when he made it at the end, it seemed like some type of like a gumbo stew type.
Yeah,
of thing.
I think that describes it pretty well. Yeah, it is kind of like a gumbo thing. Let me see what exactly goes into it.
But throughout the movie, he's always talking about this paella he's making, and I gotta laugh at him just because paella just kind of sounds like a, you know, like a hoity-toity type of food to eat, I don't want to say pompous.
It is a Spanish dish. Many non-Spaniards view it as Spain's national dish, but Spaniards almost unanimously consider it to be a dish from the Valencian region.
Ooh.
So, bit of controversy in the paella world.
Oh wow! Paella wars.
Yeah, no, but it's got rice. It's got like some fish things. I think there's like some shrimp. Apparently, it comes from the Arabic meaning leftover. So it's kind of like a mix of things. So I think the ingredients can vary quite a bit.
Far
but enough. But it's often like they often use seafood instead of meat and beans to make it. And I've had like a seafood paella, and I remember it being very, very good.
Okay, I will have to try that someday.
You're going to have to find a restaurant where you can get some paella.
Damn, now I want some paella. Shit.
I know.
I was poo-pooing paella, but now I can't stop thinking about it.
No, do not poo-poo the paella. I had no idea until this movie that it was so involved to make, but you know, you get the seafood, you get the chicken, you get onions, you get garlic, bell peppers, grilled tomatoes, rice. It's all this good stuff.
I like it. Sounds good. I'll eat some. All right. Well, guys, send in your paella recipes.
All right. I'm Googling paella delivery. I'm gonna see what we can get from Grubhub here.
Paella Hut. Are you open? Oh boy. All right. So we meet Devin. He's our go-to guy. It's introduction to Devin, who quite like I think we said before, he's quite literally the only guy, the only man in this movie with like lines. Like it's like we said, it's a very female-centric movie.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which, so at this point, we find out that Abby has hired a tarot card reader named Lady Sunshine, played by Cherry Jones, who comes in and does like a tarot card reading for everybody in the house.
Yes. And it's just kind of like this is where I felt like the movie was starting to meander a little bit, because it was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to do a reading. Here's your character trait. Here's your character trait. Here's your character trait.
It was a good scene, but yeah, like it does meander a bit, and it gives like a lot of the kind of the backstory on each of the characters. And she's basically telling everybody like, you know, you were all good friends, but you know, you haven't talked to each other in a while, and there's like secrets everybody's keeping. It's basically just kind of doing some backstory about, and some, again, some foreshadowing about the big fight that's going to happen later on in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if we necessarily needed it, but it was some funny-ish things.
Right. Like, I think at one point, Lady Sunshine does a tarot card reading for Jenny, who's, you know, Emily Spivey, who's like the neurotic one. And she puts down the card of the devil. And then she sees, like, as she's telling her what the devil means, like, Jenny's already left the room. Like, she bolted. A little funny thing.
Yeah.
Right. So basically, it's her. And at one point, she puts down three cards, and it's like a garden card, but it's in between some snakes and some rocks. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, like, you know, oh, this is not a great sign. It seems like there's like a lot of things, like I said before, like you guys used to be friends, but there's like a lot of things keeping you from being friends. And if you don't get over it, your friendship will no longer exist. So, so it's like, get over your shit, because it's later than you think. And they say, all right, well, that'll be $475, please.
Yes.
Which is a lot.
That seems high for a tarot reading, even for like a group tarot reading, you know?
Yeah, like I was like, Jesus, that much? I thought, don't they do it for like $20 in the city?
Yeah, it feels like somebody, like everybody should throw in $20 and you give this lady like $100-$150 maybe.
Yeah, at the most. At the very most.
At the most. I don't know. I don't know if there are high-end tarot readings. I don't know.
Yeah. I used to do it all through Miss Cleo back in the day, but I don't know.
I mean, it's like you never hear about like a certified tarot reader.
Yeah, they're always kind of like on the black market. They're always like kind of independent people. You don't see a tarot card reader who's head up by a big company.
It's never like I went to university and I studied, you know, 17 years to learn how to be a tarot reader. No, it's you learn from some dude or some lady, you know?
Some guy lives at a van down by the river. I hear
it. Exactly. I'm just saying, I think maybe this whole tarot reading business, it might not be on the up and up.
It's a bold statement, my friend.
I don't know.
You got to tarot card people after you with that that slander.
Yeah, I guess so. Somebody, yeah. Somewhere there's like some tarot reader listening to this podcast, and like, oh, how could they disparage the integrity of tarot readers? Oh, I knew you were going to say that because I drew the happy clown card. And
happy clown card?
Yeah.
I think that's the Joker you're talking about. Are you?
That's No. That's like in the Simpsons episode where they go into Lisa's future. She talks to like the fortune teller and she's like, oh, death, the death card. That's not bad because that just represents transition or change. And then she's like, oh, the happy clown card.
Dude, that's a deep dive. I did not get that reference. Holy moly.
I think it was the happy clown card. I'm probably getting that wrong.
Guys, call in. Let us know.
Yeah.
All right. So then after that, the tarot card reader kind of left a bad taste in their mouths. Like, oh, that was depressing. Shouldn't have done that. Which I think was based on a real thing. I think I heard him say that in an interview where like, yeah, we did a tarot card reading for Rachel Dratch's birthday and that tarot card reader kind of bummed us all out. So anyway, after that, they decided to go for a little wine tasting in the wine country. And I think at this point, Catherine, Anna Gasteyer's character, is like checking her phone, constantly checking her email. She's constantly on her phone all the time. And she meets up with Tammy, and then they have a little conversation. Then Tammy says, you know, can I give you a little advice? If anybody starts a sentence with, can I just say something? Then you should probably just stop it right there because whatever comes next is not going to be good. Which is, again, some more foreshadowing.
Okay, I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit. It was not the happy clown card on that Simpsons episode. It was, in fact, the happy squirrel card.
Oh, my God. All right.
And apparently, that has become a bit of an in-joke in the tarot community ever since the Simpsons episode Lisa's Wedding.
Interesting. Happy squirrel, you say?
The happy squirrel card.
Okay. All right, so guys, don't come at us with angry tweets now. We've corrected ourselves.
Yeah. Just stop composing that tweet right now. I'm sending a link to Darren right now so he can see.
Oh, please do.
Yeah.
That's very important.
Yeah. No. I mean, we got to show the receipts.
Yeah, exactly. Receipts. So the girls go wine tasting. We have Devin driving them. And I guess because Devin kind of keeps on his own schedule, that kind of irritates Abby, who's very, you know, scheduled and itinerary focused. Mm-hmm. They go drive off. They play Kim Wilde, Kids in America, which is always a great song.
Love that song.
Fantastic song. And then they just go have some wine tasting. And we learn that none of them are, you know, experts in wine at all. And they don't really care that much about wine like that. They just want to drink and have fun. There's one scene where they're having like one of those like wine tasting classes led by a sommelier. Mm-hmm. And that sommelier is Liz Kakowski, one of the writers of the film.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. She makes a little appearance and like she's trying to teach him about wine and, you know, tannins and wine crystals or whatever they're called.
Yeah, you mean tannins, don't you?
What'd I say?
I think you said tannins.
I did say tannins. All right, I meant tannins.
No, tannins are like bird claws.
Yeah, I knew that. All right, tannins. Oh, boy. But yeah.
I mean, not that a sommelier can't know about bird claws. I mean, they can have other interests outside of wine, but you'd expect them to tell you more about tannins.
You don't know what's in that wine. You don't know what gives it the flavor.
I don't know their wife.
Could be tannins or talons.
Yeah, it could be tannins.
Yeah, whatever. Don't judge. Yeah. But yeah, so like she's trying to teach them about wine, and everybody's kind of, oh, okay, that's interesting. I'm just going to go walk over here and drink some more wine. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And as that happens, the group kind of breaks off and, you know, two each, and they kind of talk about the other women behind each other's backs. And of course, they all start with, can I just say something? You know, like, Abby's being really, a stickler about this itinerary. And of course, Abby's talking to somebody else saying, can I just say something? Like, you know, there was a lot of that. Just like,
yeah.
A lot, again, like they have issues within the group, but no one's talking to each other about it. But they're talking to other people about the issues they have with somebody else in the group.
Yes. That's I remember like once when I was telling my parents about like some angry thing. And I was like, you know, sometimes when I'm mad about something or somebody, I don't even like go to the person I'm mad at. I talk to somebody else about that. And they're like, oh, that's called triangulation. I'm like, oh, OK, there's a name for it. OK.
Oh, triangulation. Never heard of that.
Triangulation. There's like a term for it.
Huh. Interesting. Well, so at this point, there's tons of triangulation. Like at one point, Liz Kakowski's character says, all right, we just have one rule. Just don't go walking through the vineyards, please, because they're all organic. And of course, the very first thing they do is just kind of walk into the vineyards talking, saying, can I just say something? which I don't know, you got a kick out of me.
That's cute.
Right. And so it's just basically Naomi talking to Rachel Dratch's character about, like, you know, Catherine's on her phone all the time, all about work, and, you know, just, you know, we're here to enjoy ourselves. And it's just basically, again, everybody's talking to somebody else about someone else, but not talking to that person. And so, again, we see the cracks in the friendships kind of start to form and get bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure it's going to stop there, and they're not, that those cracks in the friendship aren't going to widen at all over the course of the film.
Yeah, I think we're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like the scene where it was Amy Poehler and Rachel Dratch, and they're both like tasting the wine, and the bartender, who is a character actor I know, but I don't know his name, but I know his face. He's like one of those, hey, it's that guy. And he's like, well, what do you taste? What do you smell in the wine? He's like, there are no wrong answers. There are no wrong answers. And Amy Poehler's like, green apples? And he's like, yes, yes, very good, very good. And then Rachel Dratch goes, canned peaches? And he's like, no. And it's like, how could you even say that? And she's like, well, you said there were no wrong answers. And he's like, what? But no, canned peaches. There are no peaches.
Yeah, that's not a right answer.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, lemon? Yes, very good, very good. And then Rachel Dratch just goes, grapes? Oh, yes, well, grapes, obviously.
Okay, so I looked it up. So that guy you're talking about is Craig Kakowski.
And, Craig Kakowski. Oh,
nepotism?
Nepotism, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, the Kakowski family.
And I think the thing you probably recognize him from, he was on Community. He plays like the cop.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. He's the cop. He's the cop from Community. Exactly. Right. Which I just rewatched a month or two back.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if he's, I mean, he's got to be related to Liz. Oh, brother of Liz Kakowski. There it is.
Well, there you go. There you go. It all comes together.
And brother-in-law of Akiva Schaffer.
Oh.
From The Lonely Island. It all comes together.
Wow. Comedy is a tight-knit community.
It is indeed.
You gotta marry into some comedy family, man.
I know. Who's single now that you can like hook up with? Is I don't know.
I don't know. We'll put a pin in that for now.
Exactly.
I'll find somebody. I'll take him out for paella.
Oh, sweet. So, again, like everybody is kind of talking behind each other's back about the issues. Again, no one's saying anything. So then they leave the wine tasting, and the next thing that Abby has on the itinerary is she has t-shirts made for everybody saying, you know, the big 5-0, and she wants them to all take a drone shot outside.
Yeah.
And, again, like it's one of those things where Rebecca, she's like, you know, she just likes to hang out and, you know, just wants to be with her friends. But Abby's like, no, we have a very, you know, very strict itinerary. We need to do this at this time, this at this time. And it's starting to grate on each person. And
yeah they kind of have it out with her at this point.
Right like I want, yeah, so like when they're all wearing the t-shirts and they're all at the place, like Abby kind of snaps at them. It's like, you know, can we please just do this now, please, can we? And then like that's when Abby kind of reveals that she lost her job. And
what?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's why she was cleaning out her desk at the beginning of the film,
dude. You know, now that you say it, now you're right.
Wow.
That is some subtle foreshadowing there.
Wow.
This is like a Swiss watch, this movie. That's like some Citizen Kane Rosebud shit there.
Right, yeah. And so at this point she kind of realized she lost her job, and she also
What?
Rule of threes, guys, rule of threes.
Yeah.
So at this point she's getting ready to upset at everybody for not going along with her itinerary and her plan, that she kind of latches out at everybody about how Catherine's on her phone all the time. And Naomi is kind of going through her own thing that she's not telling anybody about. And I think she also kind of tells Rebecca how no one really likes her husband, Brian, at this point. And she basically has a meltdown.
Yeah. 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 It's everything's out on the table.
Right, and then at one point she kind of like walks away from everybody just to cool down, and then her friends are like, "Well, why she got fired? Why wouldn't she tell us that?"
What?
God damn it! Okay, and then Naomi says, "Yeah, you know, I guess, you know, people sometimes don't want to tell other people, things like that. And then Rebecca's like, hey, wait a minute, do you guys hate Brian? And they're all like, no.
Brian's great.
He's a prince. Which is like, I thought that was pretty clever.
Yeah.
So now at this point, they get back on the van that Devin have them driving around, and they're all kind of quiet and just kind of letting the big blowout simmer for a bit. Mm-hmm. And then Jade texts Val at that point, and
yeah, Val's been waiting for Jade, the waitress, in the night before to text her back all day,
right?
And it's like that early time where it's like, oh, well, is this person going to respond? Why haven't they responded yet? And you're driving yourself nuts, and you're telling yourself all sorts of things, and then they finally respond, and you're like, oh, okay,
right? Yeah, because like, I mean, she really liked Val, really liked Jade, and she was also worried, like, oh, am I too old for her? She's like so much younger than me.
But yeah.
At this point, Jade responds to her and says that, oh, yeah, I have an art show happening today. Would you and your friends are welcome to come. So
right.
They were like, all right, let's go to the art show. Because I think at this point, Abby didn't really care about the itinerary anymore. She's like,
she gets fed up. She actually tosses the itinerary out the window of the shuttle.
And I think at that point,
there was another line I like where Maya Rudolph just leans over and she says, do you think tossing out the itinerary out the window was on the itinerary? And then Jenny goes like, I guess we'll never know.
It's a good line.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that was scripted or improv, but it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So when Val gets a text about the art show, everybody's like, yeah, let's go to the art show. Let's, you know, we'll do that. That'll be our thing, and it'll be fun. And like, basically, trying to smooth everything over.
Right, right. They want to salvage something out of the weekend. They want to make it fun again.
Right.
And so they get to the art show, and it is a very underwhelming art show. It's there's one exhibit that is just nothing but a bunch of shoeboxes affixed to the wall.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's like it's full of like young, hip, trendy millennials, and
yeah,
you know, like you said, like they're kind of like. Like the art exhibit is like a broken TV, and it's like, oh, that's art type of
just
vibe.
Very, very trite, very shallow type of stuff. And then we discover that Jade's art is all connected to the old Fran Drescher sitcom, The Nanny. So it's all these portraits of Fran Drescher.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. It's a choice.
Yeah. It's a choice. It's a way to go.
Yeah. I mean, of course, to us, it looks ridiculous, but like the people at the art show are all taking it very seriously. I like this one line. Somebody said where they say, well, I never saw The Nanny, but I don't want that to stop me from participating in this conversation.
Right, right.
And the artist is like, yeah, it shouldn't.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't. They're all very young. They're all very pretentious. They're all very, you know, into themselves. And it's just very insufferable.
At one point, somebody else said, have you considered doing any other sitcom-based art, like Alf maybe?
Yeah.
And she said, you know, that's a really good question, but I want to focus on female characters right now because I feel like, you know, time's up on Alf right now.
Yes, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Well, you know, Alf, very problematic, you know, like from today's light. You know, he ate all those cats and stuff.
Walking around naked, no clothes around small children.
Sure. There you go. There you go.
I mean, disgusting. Disgusting.
I get it. Yeah. Time's up for Elf. I agree.
So it's that type of vibe. And I think at this point, Catherine says, hey, can I ask you young people something? Do you guys still watch TV? Is that a thing? And then one of the people said, well, I've only seen TV in movies.
Yeah.
And she's like, I knew it. I got to call my agent.
Yeah, and it turns into kind of this whole thing where the lead character is kind of calling the young artists on their BS and how pretentious they are. And
yeah, it's a little okay, boomer. But as a man in his 40s, I identified with this because, like, you know, it's basically telling them they're all so overconfident, and no one tells you, you know, you suck or you know things. You know, there's no kind of, I guess, real adversity in your life or people telling you you're bad. At one point, Emily Spivey's character, Jenny, says, you know, when I was younger, like I read some of my work in front of an audience and no one laughed. No one liked it. One person in the background said, oof. And like I needed that oof because like that oof told me I was terrible. So like, I'm a good writer now because people were told me I sucked, and you young people.
And Val like goes off on a rant about how porn is too accessible for people of their generation. She's like,
yeah, it really is.
I had to like travel across half town to find any lesbian porn. And
that's a valid point. Like, it's just there. It's just everywhere. This porn.
And of course, all the young people are like, "Oh, is that why you're all so repressed and have so many hang-ups about sexuality?" And
I mean, yeah, like, because you know, our cast is letting these young people have it, but then the young people aren't angry; they're more like intrigued by it. We see them all taking out their camera phones and like videotaping it. And it's
and actually, like, Jade later said, like, asked Val, she's like, "Hey, could you have your friends like do that thing at like our next show? Because that went over really well."
Yeah, it's like, I guess it's like maybe a commentary on how like everything now is entertainment to young people, or like even like honest outbursts like that is like more fascinating, and it's like, oh, I need to videotape this. This is like intriguing. Instead of like being in the moment, which is interesting. So then after that, we see, well, Catherine, because she had to call her agent about the TV thing, she has to find a place where she can get Wi-Fi. She goes into a bar. She meets up with Tammy again, and then they have a nice little convo.
Yeah, I thought it's fun to see like Tina Fey pop in and out of the movie. It's fun. And I thought this movie also did a nice idea of I thought this movie also did a nice job of like pairing off the characters in various combinations throughout the movie. So you don't just see like the same two together all the time. We see about pretty much every individual pairing at some point in the movie.
Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting choice too. I really enjoyed that, to show, you know, how, like you said, like each character gets along, or if one character is closer to one person than another, you get to sort of see those different dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. Different dynamics in the group.
Yeah, and so we also see Catherine talk to Tammy about the TV deal, and Tammy kind of lets her know, like, you know, if your friends should let your friends know, or your friends should know that you actually enjoy being a workaholic. You enjoy working. They should accept that and be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we cut back to the art gallery. You know, Val apologizes to Jade for her friends kind of having that big outburst. But of course, Jade likes it. Val and them kind of have a moment. And Val kind of tries to get closer to them. And I think Val says, "Oh, can I ask you a question?" And Jade says, "I think I know what you're going to ask me."
I charge $800, but I'll let you have it for $600. And it's this gigantic painting of Fran Drescher.
Yeah, and I think Paula Pell did some really good acting here, where it's like you kind of see her hold back, like the pained look in her face, because she was really hoping to make a connection and, you know, hook up with this person, but she's like, oh, she doesn't maybe quite see me the same way I see her. I thought it was actually really good acting right there.
Yeah, it was a nice moment. I've really come to like Paula Pell. She is so good on AP Bio.
I have to watch that. Like, I think I saw like the first episode and I just kind of zoned out. But like, again, like Last Man on Earth, that's another show that has it's called Following.
I really came to like AP Bio. It's it had like two seasons. They're both kind of abbreviated seasons, but they're doing new episodes for Peacock, the new NBC streaming service. So
okay, I will give AP Bio a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely
recommended.
Okay. And so after the art show, everybody kind of goes home. Everybody's at their low point. Val bought two paintings of Fran Drescher. Naomi's still bummed out about the message she got on her phone from her doctor that she still hasn't listened to. You know, everybody's kind of at a low point after today. Like, no one's really, like, happy at this moment. Devin's still making the paella.
Yeah, he's got like a gigantic skillet over the fire, the campfire thing they've got out back.
Yeah, it's like Fred
Flintstone. Fire pit, I should say.
Yeah, it's like a big old Fred Flintstone bowl. Just cooking outside. Like, it's like, oh, is that clean? Like, can anything just fly in there? That doesn't seem great.
I don't know, but
that's just me. But yeah, and so at this point, we also see Rebecca is about to call it a night, and she, at one point, she kind of throws her back out, and she kind of just kind of lays on the floor, and she can't really move, and she
she's like right by one of the doors, and she just is like leaning over a bit, and just throws her back out, and she is stuck on the floor. Nobody comes by, nobody hears her, so she spends the rest of the whole night there
on the floor. So then we get this one scene where Abby is in her bedroom. She's about to go to sleep. She puts on she has like a sleep apnea machine.
CPAP machine.
A quick little bit of trivia. That is Amy Poehler's actual CPAP machine.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, she's about to go to sleep, put on the CPAP. Devin comes up. It's like, hey, you know, so the paella is going to be cooking. It's going to take a few more hours. And Abby's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And then there's like a long pause. And then Devin kind of just stares at her. And she's like, wait, what do you want? And then Devin says, hey, maybe can I offer you some sex? And then there's a crazy long pause between what he said and what and how Abby reacts. Like, Abby just kind of stares at him like, wait, what? Because like up to this point, there's been no like sexual tension at all between them. This really just comes out of nowhere for her and for the audience. And after a huge, long, long pause, she's like, yeah, all right, fine.
Yeah. It is the most indifferent agreement to have sex ever.
I know indifferent sex, and that was some indifferent sex.
It was just like, okay, we're doing this, but it's really just for the lack of anything better to do at this exact moment.
Indifferent, passionless sex. God, you gotta love it.
Do ya?
I mean, hey, it got me through college.
Yeah.
Okay. He said jokingly. He said
good to know.
All right, so yeah, the next morning happens. Of course, Abby kicks Devin immediately out of his bed, saying, "Yeah, get the fuck out." Naomi.
I like when we come up in the morning, and yeah, he's in bed, and she's got her whole CPAP hookup happening. And if you haven't seen like one of the CPAP machines, it is like a whole apparatus mask that you put over your face to help you breathe. You know, it's for people with like sleep apnea who can like spontaneously stop breathing in the middle of the night.
It's bonkers. It's like that face mask people put on like when they're like in Top Gun, like they're airplane fighter pilot person.
Right. It is just like it's like more ostentatious than a Hannibal Lecter mask, you know?
Yeah. Almost as crazy as Bane's mask, but not quite.
Yes. I was born in the darkness.
Oh, wow. Is Bane on the line with us right now?
Where did John go? Wrong.
John, what did John
do? I'm from Wild Wine Country. What do you want to know about it?
Do you feel like you're in control? Wow, where did John go? I was...
Anyway.
Hey, there you are. John, you missed Bane. He was on the...
Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame. I'm sure Bane and I would have had so much to talk about.
Indeed.
Yeah. If only Bane could have like remembered more movies, more lines from the movie The Dark Knight Rises. Bane ironically only saw that movie like once or twice because it wasn't very good.
Fair. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Fucking talk about it. All right, yeah, so at this point...
we're on Sunday. It is Rachel's actual birthday, and they all discover her like sprawled out in the hallway.
Yeah.
And they're all like, oh, happy birthday. But you know, she is her back is in a bad way, so they have to spend like pretty much the entire third day just rolling her around in a rolling chair or on a golf cart, or they get a lot of mileage out of this.
Yeah, I mean basically like while she was on the floor all night, like she kind of realized that no, this is a big deal. Like, I'm turning 50. That's like a quarter of a century or something like that, or half a century.
That would be half, Darren.
I don't know numbers.
You did all that math before figuring out when all these people's tenures at SNL overlapped, but you don't know that 50 is half of 100.
I know SNL numbers. I don't know numbers.
Okay.
Come on. All right. So, all right. She kind of had this awakening. She kind of a family of raccoons came by because, like, where she laid down, she was, like, near a, like, a window door. So, like, raccoons came by, and she looked at the raccoons in the eye, and, like, I think she kind of had this realization, like, oh, no, we should, I'm turning 50. We should do everything we can right now. I can't take it easy like I wanted to. So she wants, now she really wants to do everything on the itinerary, you know, carpe diem type of thing. So, but again, like, her back is out. Oh, she also realizes that, like, her husband kind of sucks. And that's when all the friends are like, oh, thank God. Now we can talk about, we can freely talk about how much her husband, Brian, sucks. He's the worst.
Right, right. We still don't know exactly how he sucks. We don't never meet Brian in the movie, do we?
He's in the background early on in the movie.
Okay.
When Rebecca's on the phone with everybody. He's, like, playing video games and has his headphones on. And, you know, he just kind of sucks. That's all we know. I mean, I see this movie as kind of, like I said, like a reverse of The Grown-Ups, where, like, you know, all the male characters are upfront and all the female characters are kind of underwritten. This is like the flip of that. Mm-hmm. All the male characters are kind of underwritten in this film.
Okay. All right.
And that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
I wasn't really, that wasn't really a complaint. That was just kind of an observation. I was like, hey, we don't really see Brian, do we?
Nah, you see, we see him briefly in the beginning, and that's about it.
Yeah, I wasn't dying to see Brian, you know. It's enough to know that he sucks.
I want to know what's Brian's story. What's his side of all this? When will Brian have his say?
I don't know. I don't know. When will they ever make a movie with a man as the central protagonist?
When will the white man get his day in the sun? When will that happen?
Don't know. Don't know.
We'll you know, light a candle, everybody. We'll get through this someday.
Yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, so they pick up Rebecca off the floor. They put her in a wheelie chair. They dress her in her finest muumuu, because I think at the when she threw her back out, she's wearing a bathrobe. She's like, put me in my finest muumuu. So they put her in a muumuu, put her in a wheelie chair, wheel her out to the shuttle. They can't find Catherine for some reason. She's away, so they just leave without her. And then they go to where they have this brunch set up where it's this dress up to look like their old workplace, Antonia's.
Yeah. And they've all got their, like, t-shirt uniform things that they had that say Antonia's, and she got the menu board, the actual menu board from the old pizzeria, and she's got that, and it says Happy Birthday, Rebecca, on it. And they said, hey, you know, and we couldn't get the real Antonio because he's dead, but we got this DJ who's dressed up like Antonio.
Yeah, he'll play Bust a Move.
Yeah, which I guess was like the era where they were all working at Antonio's together.
Yeah, it seemed like late 80s type of vibe. And they also have t-shirts that they used to wear when they waitress at Antonio's. So so they all play Bust a Move, they start to dance, and that's when Catherine comes in. And I don't know if we addressed it, but that's like an ongoing theme throughout the film, where, like, Catherine always feels like she's left out of the group because she felt like she wasn't, like, invited originally to this.
Yeah, she's getting this vibe. Like, at one point, like, they're talking about sharing a photo, and she's like, "Oh, well, where can I see that?" And they're like, "Oh, it's all in the group album that we set up," and she wasn't invited to that. So it's just like these little subtle things. It's like, oh, gee, am I not supposed to be here? Was I not expected to be here? Or
yeah, it's like a double-edged sword because, like, she is constantly busy and on her phone, and she's constantly kind of taking herself out of the group. But then again, when she finds out that the group is doing stuff without her, she feels left out. Like, how come you didn't tell me? It's like, you know, it's like she's always busy, but then when she's not in the thing, she feels left out.
Yeah, yeah.
Which happens.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. It's, you might not always want to be included in everything, but it is still nice to be invited.
Absolutely.
That's how I feel about a good 75% of the parties I am invited to.
Wow. Name names. Name parties.
No.
Stuck in beef. Stuck in drama.
No, that's okay.
Okay, fine. All right, so yeah, at this point, Catherine sees, I wasn't invited to this. Oh, what's up with that? And of course, now this is the scene where the big blowout happens, where Naomi says, you know, you always do this. Like you said, we leave you out, but then you leave yourself out. And when we invite you to things, you don't make it. And then, you know, she lets Naomi lets it out that she went to the doctor. She's kind of stressed because she went to the doctor and she took a test and she might have breast cancer, and she's too afraid to check the message about the results of the test she took because she might have breast cancer.
Yep.
Which I thought was like a really interesting thing to put in the screenplay, just because Maya Rudolph's, you know, her real life mom, Minnie Riperton, passed away from breast cancer. So to put that in there, I was like, wow.
Oh, geez, I didn't even get that connection.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, she.
Yeah. No, I know her mom was the singer who sang that song, "Loving You," right?
Yeah, "Loving You," "Inside My Love." She was like a big deal in the 70s, but yeah, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure she passed away from breast cancer. So like to have that in the movie, I was like, wow, that's interesting. I didn't mean to bring it down, but yeah, I just thought it was like, wow.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. I had no idea. But
Yeah. Diagnosed with breast cancer and yeah. Okay, so then...
Hey, did you know that Abby got fired from her job?
What?
Yeah.
When did this happen?
I just found this out. I don't know. I was reading a summary of the movie.
I
found it very surprising. I thought I'd share because I don't think we'd mentioned that yet.
Wow, I did not know that. Yeah. But yeah, so like after Naomi reveals that, you know, she might have breast cancer, she gets angry and storms off. And then of course that's when Abby kind of, Abby and Rebecca get upset and they have a fight. That's when Rebecca says something like, look, I told you I didn't want all this. I wanted something nice and easy, but you wanted all this stuff.
Yeah, she's like, you know, you asked me over and over what I wanted for my 50th birthday, but you didn't do anything I wanted. You just did what you wanted. And this wasn't for me. This was for you. And this is because, like, you've been so rudderless in your life. This was something you could control.
And... Yeah, because as I just recently found out, like, Abby got fired from her job.
What?
Rule of tens.
Wow.
Yeah. So then after that, Abby storms off. So it's Naomi storms off, Abby storms off, and then the rest of the friends kind of find a golf cart, and then they drive after them.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it when, you know, you see Anna Gasteyer, she's like storming off, and then Amy Poehler is shortly behind her, and she's like, don't come after me. And she's like, I'm not coming after you. I'm storming off myself.
Yeah, exactly. And then the rest of the friends in the golf cart with Rachel Dratch in the back because she can't move because she threw her back. And yeah, this weekend is rapidly devolving, as it were. And so then they all kind of walk off to the outside and in the grassy side. They're off, but like on top of a hill. And of course, they have it out. They're like, all this stuff is, you know, just kind of all this stuff that they kept pent up is coming out. And then at one point, Naomi gets bit by a snake in the grass, and she freaks out, thinking it might be poisonous, of course. And they all try to figure out what to do. Nobody's phone has a Wi-Fi. It's another ongoing thing throughout this film. Like they're constantly looking for like Wi-Fi service and cell service on their phones. Val sees that there's two people in a truck, like at the bottom of the hill by the side of the road. And Val's like, no, you're not down on my watch. And then so Val tries to run down the hill to get help from the guys in the truck, but she ends up tripping and falling and, you know,
Does a whole tumble down the hill. It's very Princess Bride as you wish. That's the sort of steepness of a hill that we're talking about here.
As you wish.
Yeah.
So Val's not able to get the truck. The truck drives away, but she's like down the hill now. And Jenny's like, oh my God, you're okay. So then Jenny goes down the hill to run after her to make sure she's okay. And then it kind of becomes like this very, I guess, almost like therapeutic ritual thing where like each one of them kind of run down the hill or roll down the hill to catch their friends.
It becomes a bonding thing.
At one point, Rebecca says, oh, what happened? And they say, oh, so, you know, Val fell down the hill. And she's like, all right, get me out of this golf cart. Roll me down the hill. And then they literally pick her up and roll her down the hill to be with their friends.
Yes. Yes. And it puts her back right. So, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So, if any people can't afford a chiropractor, and your back hurts, just roll down a hill.
Yep.
That's right. If you can't afford, Medicaid, just find a nice, good, sturdy hill and just have at it.
Yep, but, I mean, be sure to have your friends, like, haul you around in a golf cart for the better part of the day first.
Right, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Let's find a good hill. If you live in San Francisco, this, you know, there are hills everywhere, so you'll be good there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so then they all roll down the hill, and they kind of, it's like kind of their way of bonding and kind of, you know, getting out all the toxicity of that was in their, you know, relationship before, and then they kind of come back renewed, with a renewed vigor, as it were.
Yes. Vigor, all renewed.
Uh-huh. So then they cut to, oh, and also at one point, Catherine is able to get cell phone service, and it's the people about the TV show, and she's decided not to take the TV show because she wants to spend more time with her friends and all that. And it's like, oh, it's a nice little bonding moment. And they all kind of end up rolling down the hill together as one. The next scene is them in the hospital. We find out the snake bite wasn't poisonous. It was just like, it could have been like a sharp twig or something like that, the doctor said.
Yeah, yeah. And the doctor, I should point out, is played by Amy Poehler's brother, Greg Poehler. And he has a very interesting character name. His name, apparently, I don't think it's ever said in the movie, but his name, according to the Wikipedia entry on Wine Country, is Dr. Dick Swing.
Gotcha. All right.
Dr. Dick Swing. Not two words, I should point out. It's not, he's not like Richard Swing. It is Dick Swing. That is one word. That is apparently his surname.
Yeah. I just imagine him saying, oh, actually, no, the G is silent, so it's Dr. Dick Swing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Dr. Dick Swing. Yeah, of like the Swedish Dick Swings.
Yeah. Yes, the Swedish Dick Swings.
Yeah.
So it looks like everything's okay. And then at one point, Catherine says, actually, no, we have one more call to make. And then she kind of, you know, gets Naomi's phone and says, like, we should really check this message or call back the doctor to find out the result of the test. And so, actually, no, Catherine makes the call for her, that I remember it.
Yeah, Catherine's been making, trying to make, like, dictate calls and dictate emails using Siri the whole movie. And so she, like, grabs Naomi's phone and is like, hey, call doctor. And then she's like, what's the doctor's name?
And oh, Dr. Melton.
Not Dick Swing.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Yeah.
So they call the doctor. Everybody's, you know, around her, supporting her. And she finds out that the test...
They're like, no matter what, yeah, we're here with you.
Right. And they find out, you know, the test came back negative and everything's okay.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, then they all leave, even though they're all battered and bruised, but they're stronger, better friends for it.
And then they run into Tammy again at the hospital.
Yeah, Tammy just pops up.
What are you doing here? And she's like, oh, I heard about, the bunch of middle-aged women being brought to the hospital, figured it was you.
Yep, and sure enough, it was.
Yep.
And then they all kind of leave the hospital with this, like, renewed friendship. And final scene, they're all hanging out by the house, and they're all kind of drinking and having fun and... You know,
and they brought Tammy along.
Yeah, yeah. They invite Tammy to hang out with them. And, I think at this point, Abby reveals that she banged Devin.
Mm-hmm. And then Rebecca strangely says, like, I also banged Devin. And I don't know when this happened.
That was a weird addition for them to throw in there.
Yeah. And then they said, well, I guess he really did come with the house.
That was like something like Samantha from Sex and the City would say when I heard that line. I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Like, then it ends with a Prince song as they're all drinking underneath the stars, new friends, and the end.
Yeah.
And that's the film. What are your thoughts? I'll
give to you. I liked it. I found it enjoyable, but I thought it kind of meandered a bit. It was one of those films where it just kind of feels like they did a whole lot of improv and they did a whole lot of riffing while they were shooting it. And it didn't feel like the strongest story in the world, but I didn't dislike it. I still enjoyed it. I think it's worth seeing.
I'm the same way. Like, there's a lot of things in this film I did like. You know, I like kind of like the serious moments they had. I mean, there's a, you know, as a man in his 40s, there's a lot of stuff I related to it, like, you know, taking your medication and, mm-hmm. you know, getting older and mortality and, you know,
yeah,
a good playlist and like how they didn't play anything modern. Like, there's like a lot of stuff I related to. But yeah, yeah. I kind of agree with you, like, where there's like a lot of good bits in it, but I don't quite know if it came together like I wanted it to.
Didn't add up into a great, great movie. I thought it was fine. I thought it was perfectly okay. But yeah, I didn't love it. And it wasn't quite what I was expecting. But
yeah, I think
I'd like to see, you know, Amy Poehler direct some other films. And I wouldn't mind seeing another group project with this group of ladies.
No, not at all. And like, I mean, for me, I thought it really needed a stronger ending. The ending was like, it's a little too abrupt. And I was like, I could have
used a little bit more something. Yeah, kind of peters out.
Yeah, so it started off strong, but yeah, like it does kind of meander and peter in a few places. Like could use a little bit more tightening up, as it were.
But I did
like this film. I thought it was a very good movie.
Did you know Abby lost her job?
What?
Yeah.
When did this happen?
I don't know. Sometime before the film even started. Yeah.
Holy Toledo! What? Like?
I know.
This throws me for a loop.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's our film, guys. Wine Country. It's a good film. I feel like it could have been great, but it's still a decent watch.
Yep. Still on Netflix. Been there for a year, which I can't believe.
Yeah. Again, time. There's no meaning of time anymore. It's all whatever it is. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Does anything mean anything? I don't know.
No, Lord, no. I think we got to
Have some wine while things are going to hell.
Oh, please. Oh, yes. You have to tell me twice.
Yeah. That was my original plan for this movie. I was going to I bought myself a bottle of wine and I was going to watch it while drinking some wine last night, but I didn't end up watching it till this morning, and it didn't seem right breaking out a bottle of wine on a Sunday morning. So,
why not?
I don't know. Now I'm questioning that. Yeah, why didn't I do that?
I mean, if you pour like apples and oranges and stuff in it, it's sangria, and that's a perfectly fine breakfast wine to
there have. You go. There you go. If I got like some champagne and combine that with orange juice, what is that? What's that drink? Like a
orange juice?
No, it's like What is that? It's like champagne and OJ together.
Oh, mimosa.
A mimosa. Thank you. Yes. I'm blanking on all sorts of terms today.
Oh, boy.
I just keep thinking about Abby losing her job, and I'm just worried about her.
When did she lose her job?
I don't know.
Oh, God. All right. So so this film was a suggestion from one of our fans, Monette M97, who says, it falters with its writing sometimes, at times, but knowing that the cast had fun filming it made it a worthwhile to watch all the way through. Which, that's fair enough. You definitely got the sense that these group of people were friends who've known each other for years, and you definitely see, like, they're very comfortable with each other, and, like, the chemistry is pretty off the charts.
Yeah, I mean, the cast definitely has a definite rapport together just from all those years of them working together. So that's fun to see. And there are some very funny lines scattered throughout. I just wish it had like a stronger story, a stronger plot.
Right.
And then I think they really could have had some. There is some gorgeous scenery in this, we should mention. It was filmed in the Napa Valley. And it's just like, you see some of these shots and you're just like, oh my God, how is that even on the same planet as the rest of us, man?
Yeah, that I will say. If you can't afford to go to the Napa Valley, go, because it is gorgeous. It is.
Have you been for real?
No, but now that after seeing that, I was like, oh, I gotta better save my pennies. I kind of want to do this.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that for some anniversary show.
Let's do it, man. Road trip.
Yeah,
there's nothing keeping us except for a pandemic.
I mean, we can only travel within the country at this point, so
yeah. So hey guys, you might see the SNL nerds on the road, on location.
Yeah, we're just gonna throw it all away and go out to the Napa Valley. That's just 2 years till my 50th birthday, so let's do this.
Hey-o. Let's do it.
Let's do this. Well, and we'll invite Amy Poehler and Tina Fey along too.
We'll just text them. We have their numbers.
Yeah. We'll do that.
Okay. So you want to talk about the next film we're going to do? The next film we're going to do was a suggestion from another listener, Steve Harold, at Joint Partners on Twitter.
Yeah. Steve had a really interesting suggestion. This is a near forgotten film. It's a film from 1980. It stars one of the original SNL cast members, one of the original Not Ready for Primetime players. And it's called How to Beat the High Cost of Living.
Yeah. Film has Jane Curtin in it. There's a cameo from Garrett Morris, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has Susan St. James and Jessica Lange.
Yeah. Jessica Lange. Which I didn't realize she'd done a comedy before Tootsie. I had always assumed Tootsie was her first comedy. I've never seen this movie. I did watch the trailer. You sent me a link to the trailer. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's do this. What the heck?
Yeah, same here. I've never seen this film, never heard of this film until Steve mentioned it. And it's streaming on Amazon Prime for free. So I was like, free movie? Okay.
Yeah.
Meets all the criteria.
Exactly. Easily available, and we do not have to pay for it.
Sold.
Yes.
Okay, so be here when we talk about, what's the name of the movie again?
How to Beat the High Cost of Living.
How to Beat the High, who could forget? How to Beat the High Cost of Living.
You, just now.
Oh, okay.
That was what you did.
Dude, did you know Abby lost her job?
What?
Hey-o.
Rule of 50, people.
Rule of 50. Running gags. They're
running gags.
Comedy's consequence.
Tell us what your favorite running gag on the SNL Nerds show is.
Oh, comedy's constant companion, running gag.
Yeah.
And so speaking of which, that's our podcast. And if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you can follow me at Darren Credible. That's Darin Credible.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic, TrumbullL, and the word comic. And you can follow the show's Twitter adventures at SNL Nerds Show. And, suggest movies to us.
Yeah.
We may do them.
As long as we don't got to pay for it, we'll do it.
That's right. If we can, watch it on some service we have, or if we can steal it easily and we feel okay about it morally, yeah, we'll do it.
Absolutely. Yes. And as always, you can always donate to our Patreon. As always, mm-hmm. You could, we're at patreon.com/non-productive. And you could always, hit us up with their review and rate at
thank you to anybody who's listening. Thank you to anybody who's subscribing. Thank you to anybody who rates the podcast. Thank you to anyone who chooses to tell a friend about this podcast. Because, word of mouth really is the best advertising.
It really is. So, hit us up. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Yes. Okay. So please join us next week for How to Beat the High Cost of Living. If Darren can remember that is the movie that we're doing.
Dude, I just got a text. Abby lost her job.
What?
And scene.
So we'll see you next week. But until then, nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.